So, how many of you have heard of apologetics before, that term, apologetics? Does someone want to be the one to tell me what they think apologetics is? Go ahead.
I would say learning the defense of the ideology you subscribe to.
Okay, learning to defend what you believe. Would that be a summary of what you just said? Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. And I think that's a very good explanation of what apologetics is. So the next 4 weeks, we're going to be giving some very basics of apologetics, all right? And I'm going to explain what apologetics is a little bit better here. Today, we're going to be laying the foundation for apologetics and what apologetics is. This week, I'm just going to lay a foundation. Next week, we're going to be talking about evidences for God. The week after that, we're going to be talking about the reliability of Scripture. And then the final week, you are going to come up with questions, hopefully today. Like, maybe even before we start, you have some questions that you would like to have answered. Maybe something you're thinking right now. So you're going to turn those in, and then I'm going to do my very best to answer those questions with the help of others, too, in case I don't have the answer, all right? So that's going to be kind of the outline over the next 4 weeks here. I do want to say, too, if you do have any other questions and you're just not comfortable, say, sharing them in your small group or in a big group, you're welcome. You know, you can get with me and ask me those questions. If I don't know the answer to it, which sometimes I don't, then I'll do my very best to find out the answer for you, all right? So let's begin here by just defining our terms, all right? Okay, so we're going to define our terms first, all right? So what is apologetics? So this is kind of a more detailed definition here. Apologetics is giving a reasoned defense for what we believe concerning reality and why we believe it. All right, that would be apologetics. It comes from a Greek word in the New Testament that we're going to be talking about here from 1 Peter 3:15. But the term apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia. Apologia, which literally means a reasoned statement or a verbal defense. And I'm sure you've heard of the term apologize before. Well, we think of apologize as saying I'm sorry, but actually the term comes from giving a reason for what we do, all right? Which I know kids like to do that. They give a reason why instead of saying they're sorry. So, which I guess we're like that as adults too, aren't we? But apologetics is really giving a reason why. So in 1 Peter 3:15, Peter writes this, "But in your hearts, regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to everyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you." So it's making a defense, all right? Now, there's two sides to this, okay? And we're going to be discussing this later. But it's not just making a defense. First, the first thing we have to do is be able to give that hope itself, right? There's a positive part to it. We're going to say what we believe, all right? We're going to be able to express what we believe. But apologetics is then giving the reason why we believe that, all right? So we're going to be talking about here that as we continue on. All right, so the goal. We've established the what of apologetics. Now we're going to be talking about the goal of apologetics. The goal of apologetics ought not to be winning an argument. If that's all we're in it for, then we're in it for the wrong reason, all right? Because we can win arguments and lose the person. Right, and I'm sure we've all done that. I know I've done that before, where I've won the argument, but because of the way that I present it, I lose the person. Right, and so the ultimate goal, though, is in apologetics ought to be the gospel itself, because that's our goal as Christians. All right, as Christians, our goal is to present the gospel. All right, and that's the hope that I was talking about in 1 Peter 3. All right. So that's the ultimate goal. But there's going to be an immediate goal that we're going to be talking about here. Hopefully after today, even if you don't learn anything over the next few weeks, even if you miss the next 3 weeks, let's say, today I hope to give you enough to at least begin a conversation. Like, you might know very little, but I hope after today you can at least have the confidence to get in conversations, right? Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about, though, and just very briefly, that's not what today is about specifically, but we're going to be talking about the gospel itself. So underlying all of this, our concern as Christians is the gospel itself. So we need to know what that is. Okay, so this is a little acrostic here that Ethan Drent helped me come up with a few years ago. We came up with together, and this is just using the word gospel with G-O-S-P-E-L, and just very briefly, you can write this down if you want. This is just a kind of a skeleton of the gospel. There's much more to it, but this is what I would say is a skeleton of the gospel. So we have G is God is righteous and holy. O is obedience, which man owes to God, is lacking, which we call sin, right? Sin is the name for this disobedience, and its penalty is death. P is paid in full on the cross. That penalty that we owed, Jesus paid on the cross. And then EL is eternal life is granted to those who turn from their rebellion and trust in Jesus. And that eternal life is not just for the future. Right, it begins today for those of us who believe. So that's just a very short skeleton of the gospel, but it's important that we know that. So everything that we're going to be talking about here really is focused on the gospel. All right. I would say, though, that a lot of the tools that we're going to be talking about, you can use in any discussion, right? But for us, this is our focus. So specifically, then, the goal for apologetics for the unbeliever, so when we're talking to an unbeliever, is to answer the objections which may be a barrier to hearing the gospel message. Sometimes people have heard objections that to them are so compelling that they don't even want to hear the gospel. So their minds just shut off to the gospel itself. And if we can break down that barrier by answering those objections, then there may be a willingness to actually hear the gospel, all right? In Matthew 13:19, Jesus talks about someone who hears and doesn't understand the gospel. He says this, "When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart." That's from Matthew 13:19. So it's possible that someone can hear the gospel, we think we've presented it, and that we've done our part, but they don't understand it. I mean, you might even say it, an analogy would be, I say it in German and they know French. They don't know German. And I think I did my part, but they didn't understand a word of what I said. And so I need now to explain what it was I just said, and I need to be able to explain in such a way that they can understand it, all right? So, this is another way to look at it. Apologetics aims at the mind, and evangelism aims at the heart. When I'm presenting the gospel, I'm shooting for the heart. Apologetics, though, is for that person whose mind has been confused in some way. They have objections. And sometimes, we have to be honest, sometimes they're very good objections. Sometimes people have objections and you think, yeah, that's a very good point. All right, and we want to be able to have answers for those. All right. Now, apologetics for the believer, we talked about apologetics for the unbeliever, but for the believer is important too. How many of you have, even as a believer, have heard objections that kind of rattles your faith a little bit? I'm guessing a lot of us have, right? So apologetics can be used then to answer those objections and increase our faith, to let us know that, no, we have a good reason for believing what we believe, right? So R.C. Sproul says that apologetics can be used to show that Christianity is true and that all non-Christian worldviews are false. All right? Christianity is true and that all non-Christian worldviews are false. Now, I just want to say something here as we talk about this. That doesn't mean, and I think my next slide shows this, this means taken as a whole. I'm going to say to you that every worldview has some truth to it, or no one would believe it. All right? There's going to be some truth to it, and some of it's going to correspond with us. For instance, Islam teaches that murder is wrong. Well, we agree with that. Islam teaches, for instance, that there's only one God. Now, their version of God, their idea of God is different than ours, but we would agree that there is only one God. All right? So there's truth in every belief, in every worldview, some truth. But we're talking about in total, as a whole, okay? So now we talked about this idea of a worldview, okay? And this is very important, and I want you to kind of be thinking through this idea of a worldview. Instead of specifically thinking about religion, because we think of the Christian religion, and it's true, it's a religion just like other religions, but it's actually a worldview which encapsulates everything we believe about the way reality really is, okay? Okay, so here's a worldview. Here's what a worldview is. A worldview is how one views ultimate reality, one's story of reality, okay? The way that we perceive things really are. James Anderson writes this: your worldview represents your most fundamental beliefs and assumptions about the universe you inhabit. He continues, everyone has a worldview, and we can't live without them. But not everyone knows that he has one. Worldviews shape what we believe and what we're willing to believe, how we interpret our experiences, how we behave in response to those experiences, and how we relate to others. And one Christian apologist said his daughter asked him why she was talking to her dad, and she said, why are we Christians? And he said, because Christianity is the best explanation for the way things are. Right? That was his answer to his daughter, which I think is a compelling answer. And I think it's true, too. Greg Gansel, another Christian theologian and apologist, calls this a philosophy of life. This worldview is a philosophy of life. He writes this: a philosophy of life is, at minimum, a group of ideas or claims about various aspects of reality. To have a philosophy of life is to believe certain things, in other words, to take them to be true. And to believe certain things is to think other things are false. So, merely by having a belief, I believe some exclusive truths. He writes, not only does everyone have a philosophy of life, but every philosophy of life makes exclusive truth claims. How many of you have heard something to the effect of Christians just think they're right? You Christians think you're right and everyone else is wrong. Have you heard something to that effect before? Well, guess what? It's true. And so does everyone else. They believe that their worldview is correct and everyone else's worldview is incorrect. So we don't need to apologize for that. We just need to not be arrogant, all right? And we say, that is true. I do believe I'm right. And they believe they're right too. Now the question is, what are my reasons for that? What are the reasons for holding to what I hold to? All right, and that's what we're going to be getting to. So, Greg Kochel calls a person's worldview their story of reality, which he has an actual book that's actually a really good book if you're interested in that. And he says this: if our story is true, then it should match reality, the way things really are. Therefore, reality is the ally of truth. We have an important ally, and that is reality, the way things really are. Okay, so I'm just going to give you a quick example. Hindus believe that everything is an illusion. Okay, I'm very much summarizing their belief, but they believe everything is just an illusion. And yet, they look both ways before they cross the street. Does this make any sense? They can believe that if they want. All right, and it might even be true. I mean, theoretically, hypothetically, it could be true. Then why do you look both ways before you cross the street? Because it's just an illusion. It's not real. So that would not match reality. Their belief doesn't match the way things seem to be in reality. Okay? That's just one example. Okay, next. There's three objectives concerning worldviews, and there's just three here that I want you to focus on. First one is know that everyone has a worldview. We kind of talked about that already, but know that, all right? This should give us, we should be less defensive when we know that. Whoever you're talking with has a worldview too. Okay, so we don't have to get defensive about that. There is no difference between an atheist and a religious person. None. Each believes particular things to be true about the world. All right? Philip Johnson says this: one who claims to be a skeptic of one set of beliefs is actually a true believer in another set of beliefs. You've seen the bumper sticker, perhaps, be skeptical. Well, they have their own beliefs, right? They have their beliefs, and I'm going to be skeptical of their beliefs like their bumper sticker tells me to be, right? So that's the first thing. Number two, understand and be able to explain our own worldview and to give reasons for having our worldview. All right, now, our worldview, of course, is the Christian worldview, which always encapsulates itself in the gospel message, right? That's our worldview. But there's lots of parts to that. The fact that God created everything, so the universe is the way that it is for a reason, and we can explain that because God created it, is part of that. When I had the gospel up there, and I said God was righteous and holy, I was making an assumption that there is a God, right? So, and that there are certain things about that God that we do believe. We are not neutral and should not be ashamed of that. But we must be able to explain our worldview and give reasons for having it. Okay? Next, we should help others to see their own worldviews and give reasons for them. Okay? So we should not just be on the defensive, and we're going to be talking about that here in a minute too. Others are not neutral just like we're not. Our goal is to get others to think about and verbalize their own worldview and then to give reasons for holding it. Okay, that's going to be our goal here. Since everyone has a worldview, the real issue isn't whether we have biases. Okay, well, you're biased, Christians. Sure we are. We all are. We all do have biases. But whether we're aware of them and able to think critically about them is the important thing. Okay, we need to be able to explain our biases and why we have them a certain direction. The person you are speaking to is no less living by faith than any of the most fundamental believers that you know, including ourselves. They live according to the way they believe the world is, even if they've never given it a thought. And I'm just going to ask you to assess everyone that you know, whether they've given it a thought or not. Is living according to what they believe to be true. Okay? Even if they've not thought about it, then they're assuming certain things. And if somebody says, well, who knows? You know, they might say, well, I don't have a worldview because I just don't know. But that's actually a worldview because they're assuming it's not important enough for them to find out. All right? So there's assumptions that they're making. Okay, let's continue on here with worldview. So the elements of every worldview. So every worldview has these four elements. At least these four elements, okay? They have an element of creation. In other words, how things began, where everything came from, the reason for our origin, and what ultimate reality is like. In other words, why are we here? Why is there something rather than nothing? Right? So you have some kind of an idea of creation. Next is the fall. Since we all know that something is wrong with the world, this describes the problem, right? Every religion is a religion because they think something's wrong with the world. Richard Dawkins doesn't believe in God. He believes there is no God, and so he writes books to tell everyone how to fix this problem of religion in the world because he thinks something's wrong with the world, and he thinks that something that's wrong, for instance, is religion. So he believes there's something wrong with the world himself, okay? But he just believes that science and logic is what's going to overcome that problem. Next is redemption. This gives the solution, the way to fix what went wrong. How do we fix the mess that we're in? Okay? And again, everyone has some kind of view of this, especially people that are very dogmatic about atheists, even agnostics that are writing, they're writing for a reason, right? They're passionate that something's wrong, they know how to fix it, okay? And then finally, we have restoration. So restoration describes what the world would look like or will look like once this repair takes place. They have some kind of concept, or they ought to, okay? And this is what we're going to be pushing for when we're talking with others. Okay. Now, I mentioned earlier that this is taken as a whole, all right? So a worldview is taken as a whole is what we're talking about here. Okay, so I'm just going to give you one example when I say taken as a whole. You know what? I'm just going to skip over that because we're going to come back to some of this later. Next, we're going to be talking about here, there's four elements to every worldview, but then there's questions that everyone has. And so I'm going to suggest to you that every worldview should be able to address these questions because most people have these questions, and just very briefly. First one is origin, Where do we come from? Where do we come from? Identity? Who are we? And I'm sure you've heard people say this if you've not thought it yourself. Why are we here? What's the purpose in life? Right? The meaning? Why are we here? Morality? How should we live? What's right and what's wrong? And then the destiny, where are we going? And you can see that a lot of that is answered in the four elements that we had in a worldview. Okay? All right, so next, we're going to jump past this and we're going to be talking about the skills of an ambassador. So now we're going to kind of jump into tactics. I've explained to you what apologetics is, what a worldview is, the very basics of what a worldview is. And so we're going to jump into tactics. Who can tell me what a tactic is? Yes. A game plan? Sure. I mean, you could say that, right? I mean, think in military terms. It's how you're going to, in a battle situation, it's how you're going to attack, how you're going to defend, right? The details of that, right? So in his book, Tactics, so this is Greg Kokel again, says that Christians should approach each encounter as ambassadors rather than combatants, okay? So what's the difference between an ambassador and, say, a combatant in a war? What's an ambassador do? Yes. They represent, right, whatever position they hold, they represent whatever country they're from, they're representing them, right? They're not there to fight, they're there to represent their nation. Well, we're representing Christ. We're not combatants in that sense. Okay, and this is what he says. So 2 Corinthians 5:20 says this, "Therefore we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." So he says ambassadors in Christ in any area requires three skills. And I've got them up here. First is knowledge, an accurately informed mind. Know what you believe and why you believe it. This is important for us to know. Wisdom is an artful method. In other words, being able to apply the knowledge into an effective interaction with others. So it's one thing to know something. I'm guessing probably we've all experienced this too. Sometimes I know in my head something, but I can't figure out exactly how to get it across to someone else. All right? This would be that wisdom, how to get that knowledge across to someone else. And then character, an attractive manner. We are representatives of Christ and therefore must imitate him in our conduct and conversation. So I think we need to be very aware and careful that we have these three qualities, all right, in each encounter. So in apologetics, it could be that you're up in front of a bunch of people like me defending the faith. I'm guessing for most of us, it's going to be one-on-one, maybe one-on-two encounters, all right? So as you're thinking through this, kind of put yourself in that position and be thinking and utilizing these tools with that in mind, all right? One of the things I think that's really important so we don't overwhelm ourselves is to have a modest goal. So in each encounter, when you're talking with someone, there are some people that think that every time we speak to someone else virtually, we should be getting to the foot of the cross with the gospel. Now, that should be our ultimate goal, right? But let's be honest. Very rarely is that going to happen. Doesn't happen very often. If you're standing next to someone in line at the store, you're probably not going to get to the foot of the cross. And if you do, they're probably not going to understand most of what you just said. All right. Sometimes you're going to have that opportunity. You know, one time I was on jury duty, or I got called for jury duty, but I had to wait there all day, and I'm sitting next to this lady, and I had like 6 hours waiting until they said they didn't need us, and so I was able to like completely go through the gospel with her. That doesn't happen very often, all right? But we should have a modest goal, to put a stone in someone's shoe. Now, what does he mean by that? Have you ever had a pebble in your shoe? And you're running or walking or whatever, and it just keeps bugging you and bugging you and bugging you until finally you sit down and take your shoe off and say, I got to get this pebble out, all right? Well, if you can be thinking in that kind of that mindset, then that's your goal, especially in shorter conversations, is simply to throw something out to them that's going to make them pause and say, yeah, why is that? I never thought about that. Okay? Now, again, some people say that if that's your goal, you're not being faithful because you're not getting to the foot of the cross. But I'm going to show you something here that Scripture says. Move this ahead here. If it will. There we go. Okay. So here's the question. I've got a picture up here of someone plowing a field on the left side and sowing the seed on the right side. Which one's more important? Anyone? Yes. Sowing the seed? You think sowing the seed is more important? Well, it is important, isn't it? If you don't sow the seed, nothing's going to happen. What if you don't plow the field? What's going to happen? Is the seed going to do anything? Not very much, is it? All right? So both of them are important, and we don't know which one we are in most conversations. We might just be plowing the field, and there might be 20 other people in someone's life that's going to plow the field, and then at the perfect time, someone else is going to come and plant that seed, and it's going to grow. All right? So if we think in those terms, we don't know. God is sovereign. We don't know his plan and how it's going to work out. At the end of this, I'm going to share a story. Steve already knows this, and I'm going to share you a story, something that just happened to me, actually just this weekend, all right, to just kind of give you an idea about that. Okay, continuing on here. So we're ambassadors. We're not combatants, right? And we're trying to put a stone in someone else's shoe, which can be all kinds of things. All right? And here's another key. Think in terms of questions rather than assertions. Now, we need to be able to know what we believe. All right? We need to be able to tell someone what we believe and be able to express that. However, many times, being tactical means just asking questions. People like it when you ask them questions. Well, what do you believe about that? What do you think about that? Right? People like that. And so then if we're asking questions, that's going to be something that most people enjoy. That, oh, they're asking what I think about it. And they're probably going to be more than willing to tell you what they believe about it. All right? But here's what we want to remember. The person who makes the claim bears the burden of proof. Now, again, I need to be ready to share what I believe. But if the other person's telling me what they believe, then they need to be the one to give the burden of, they have the burden of proof of why they believe what they've just stated. All right? So this is, again, kind of a tactical thing that we're talking about. Doesn't mean that we don't ever assert. We need to always be ready to assert, but as far as tactical. And so then here are the two questions that we're going to propose. All right? These are the two questions, if you can just go, walk away with a couple things here from this time, this would be one of them. First of all, these two questions, right? The first question is, what do you mean by that? So when you ask them a question, and they start to tell you what they believe or whatever it is, then you say, what do you mean by that? Okay? So what you're wanting them to do is further explain what they just said. Greg Kokel says that whenever he asks that question, he says a good percentage of the time, the person can't even explain what they mean by that. And then they realize, I don't even know exactly what I believe. So sometimes that's the stone in the shoe right there, just by saying, well, what do you mean by that? All right? So it's really just a request for clarity. Request for clarity. Another variation of this is, and I'm going to come back to that other one. A request, or let's just go ahead and I'll cover this. And the second one is how did you come to that conclusion? We're going to be discussing more about what that is, but that's the two questions there. So what do you mean by that, and then how did you come to that conclusion? Okay, so it's what did you mean by that is a request for clarity. Why clarity works, here's just three answers to that. You don't want to misunderstand the person you're talking with. Don't want to misunderstand them. Sometimes I've jumped in too fast, and I realized that's not even what they're saying. And then I've lost all credibility because they're like, he doesn't know what I even just said. All right. Next is you don't want to misrepresent him. And then third, you don't want him to misunderstand himself, which is actually kind of a key here. All right. Come on here. There we go. So another point here is, this is another way of saying, what's your point? Okay, so sometimes, and this is maybe things that you've heard, some people will say things like, well, some people are just bigots. So you're talking, and they say, well, some people are just bigots. Well, you know what they're trying to say, right? If somebody says to you, you're presenting your view, and they say, well, some people are just bigots, what are they really saying? You're a bigot. That's really what they're saying, right? So then you can ask them, well, what's your point? In other words, what do you mean by that? All right? And you can, you know, work through that. I can't go through a whole conversation there, but that's what you're trying to do. Or how about this one? Christians always think they're right. And what's your point? We just talked about that. Everyone has a worldview, so do you. Christians always think they're right. Do you think you're right? Sure, they think they're right too. So, hey, we're on the same page here, right? We both think we're right. Now let's give our reasons and see who has the better reasons, all right? Again, doing this as an ambassador, not a combatant, right? And then finally, our next here is how did you come to that conclusion? So here's the possible responses when you say, well, you presented your view. How did you come to that conclusion? Ask people that question, and a lot of times, they're not going to have a reason why. I don't know, that's just what I've always thought. I mean, you don't have a reason for that? That I would want to have a reason. Even if I'm wrong, I would at least want to have a reason for it, right? Some kind of a reason, right? So either they give a coherent and logical reason, they give an incoherent and illogical reason, or they have no good reason, right? And then we just continue on with the conversation based on what they, the response that they give, all right? And then we're going to consider their reasons, okay? This is the second. So the first thing I want you to go away with is asking these two questions. What do you mean by that? And how did you come to that conclusion? All right? And then when they give you the reasons why, these are the three things that I want you this is the three P's. You can just remember it this way. When they give you those reasons, is it possible? What they just said, is that even possible? All right? Is it plausible? Okay, that's possible, but not very plausible. And I'm going to give you some examples here in just a second. And then, is it probable? Is that pretty likely that what they just said is true? All right? I had a couple examples, but I'm going to skip over those. Okay, so first, is it possible? So, here's just an example. Darwinian evolution teaches that everything came from nothing. This is what Darwinian evolution teaches. Everything came from nothing. Something coming from nothing appears to be scientifically impossible, since we have no other examples of this. So you just, I mean, to me, it's not even plausible, or possible, I mean, because we have no other example of this. Now, somebody might say, well, the beginning of the universe. Yes, but that's begging the question. You're assuming that the universe came from nothing, but there's nothing else like that, right? So that takes an awful lot of faith to believe something that seems to be scientifically impossible, all right? Even in quantum physics, which they try to say is showing that things can happen in crazy ways, still doesn't say that something comes from nothing. It's just saying we can't figure it out yet how these things happen. There are no scientific examples of something coming from nothing. So that seems impossible. So that's the first. And whatever somebody says, you just can say that. Next, is it plausible? Some options seem unworkable on closer examination. So again, Greg Kochel gives an example of someone who said to him that the teaching of reincarnation was secretly removed from the Bible sometime during the 4th century. Have you ever heard anything similar to that? Maybe not reincarnation, but maybe other things that they were taken out of the Bible, all right? And so he asked how it was possible to remove select lines from tens of thousands of handwritten New Testament documents that had been circulating around the Roman Empire for more than 300 years. Many of these had already been buried in places not to be discovered until nearly 2,000 years later. Okay, so think of it this way. Talking about plausibility, and just using this example. Think if someone says, I'm going to change all of the New York Times editions from January the 17th of last year. Is that possible? Why not? I guess it's possible, isn't it? I mean, it's not impossible, but it's highly implausible. How are you going to find every single copy of the New York Times and destroy it or change it or whatever you're trying to do? And yet that's what someone said to Greg Kokel, happened in the New Testament. Well, I would say, okay. I mean, that's not an impossibility, but it seems highly implausible. And so I need to see some evidence for that, all right? And then finally, is it probable? Is the proposition that they give the best explanation considering the competing options? For instance, is it possible that the early Christian witnesses made up their stories despite having no financial or power gain, while also knowing that they would likely suffer persecution for their made-up tales? That doesn't seem very plausible if someone says that, and it doesn't seem for sure very probable. Isn't it more likely that they at least believed it to be true? And that's just one example, all right? Now, in the next 3 weeks, and really 4 weeks, there's no way to cover all the material. Even for the adult class, it's probably three times as long as this. And we have a fellows that we meet on Wednesday night in the fall, and we spend, 16 weeks going through this. So this is going to be the very basics. But today, I just wanted to lay a foundation for you of what apologetics is. As a matter of fact, I'll just go ahead and switch to the last page here. So what apologetics is, right, which is using a reasoned statement or verbal defense to show that Christianity is true and that all non-Christian worldviews are false. We learned about what a worldview is, that everyone has one, and that it's one's most fundamental beliefs and assumptions about the universe you inhabit, and that everyone has one, a worldview. So we don't need to be on the defensive. All right, we can say, you have one too. Let's exchange ideas here. I have a worldview, you have a worldview. Let's see who has the best reasons. All right? Next is the four elements of a worldview: creation, fall, redemption, restoration. We have the two tactical questions: what do you mean by that? How did you come to that conclusion? And then we have the three P's. When they give you that reason, is it possible? Is it plausible? And is it probable? All right? So next week, we're going to be giving some evidences for God. And again, it's going to be about 30, 35 minutes maybe. And so there's no way we can cover everything, but I'm just going to give you just a few basic ones, all right? If you need more than that, I'm willing to meet with you, give you books to read, maybe even give you a short answer if that's what you want to, all right?
Thank you. All right, so as I dismiss you guys,